your pregnancy will affect your dental health, and your dental health will affect your pregnancy. And if we kind of look at it like this, that dental health for your baby starts with you taking good care of yourself and self-care, then you are setting your baby up for a really successful dental life.
This is a Baby Brunch podcast.
CuraProx aims to celebrate 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. CuraProx Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.
Welcome to another Baby Brunch podcast. Today we're talking oral health in babies as well as parents. Our special guest in studio, Dr. Kunaiva Sadenot. But first, let's say thank you to our support.
This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior gentle all-purpose emollient moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax.
Kunaiva, welcome to Baby Brunch.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
A doctor that looks after our teeth. But you do have a passion for pediatrics.
I do. I absolutely love seeing children and just changing the opinion about dentists in general. It is so amazing to make a change that they get excited to go to the dentist. And then usually my goal is that they don't want to leave, where they have to actually be told to leave the dentist chair.
So I spoke to the team the other day and I said to them, going to the dentist for us as children was a treat. You know, we grew up and we were three kids, and when it came to dentist day, my mom would put all of us on the train. We would first catch the bus to the station, then we would go on the train from Tierfleistasi to town, and my dentist's name was Dr. Kutzman. And there we were for the day. And it was always a treat. We would first go to the dentist. And then after that, as if verdoving, you know, if the anesthetic kind of halfway worn out, then we all got fish and chips and then we went home again. So going to the dentist for us was a very big event, you know. It was the outing of the year. Yeah. Why do you enjoy working with children so much?
Because children, they are blank canvas. So when you can get in early, you can prevent all the problems, taking into account that dental problems is the leading reason why children get admitted to hospital worldwide. So if we can prevent children from having problems and being admitted to hospital, isn't that an amazing thing? Mm-hmm. And also this memory that you're sharing about how exciting and how wonderful it is. If you have this within you, then the kids never develop this dental phobia. And then it's just amazing. Taking care of their teeth becomes a priority. And then life can just be better for them. And then, of course, if you have very good dental health, it actually is a predictor of your health on the outside. So that is why oral health plays such a major role. So getting in early is the secret to having happy teeth.
I look at your biography and it talks about your passion for holistic care and also how dentistry is not just focused on one thing, on teeth, you know. When you see a dentist, you almost want to go, my teeth are fine. But you work with several other things within, let's call it pediatric dental care. What else do you deal with? Like who is your patient?
So when I see a child, it's not just looking at the teeth. They always said, I attended a lecture where they said, focus on the whole, not the whole.
Right.
And that is pretty much what I'm always doing. So when I look at a child, I'm looking at the way they're breathing. I'm looking at their muscle tone. I am looking at the way they are developing. I'm seeing if they are sensory sensitive and how that will then mean that I have to tailor everything according to what they need. I look at lip and tongue ties. I look at the future health for that child as a whole. Because when we look at dental health, children are so much more than just their teeth. Teeth play such a major role in the self-esteem of a child. So having teeth is actually such an essential part of being a child, chewing your food, being able to just grow up and have a lovely life. So if we focus on only just the teeth, you're missing a lot. So if I have a dental exam, we are looking at everything, seeing what the child likes, what they don't like. We make notes about that so that we can tailor to that child and also give advice that will help that specific child. And that is where the thing in pediatric dentistry is the most important, is tailoring it to your child. Because some children have really great at rewards and putting stickers. Other kids love digital things, so they want to have all this technology. And I have a microscope in my dental practice as well. And initially, when I got the dental microscope, I thought, what a big scary thing for a child. And they absolutely love it. If they can see their teeth on the screen, they are just amazed. And even 2-year-olds would sit and have these photos taken. It's easier than doing dental x-rays for them, where I thought they'd be so scared of it. So incorporating all the technologies into the children, it absolutely is amazing. And then, of course, the teaching, the patients and the parents, I learn so much from each of those patients coming in that it's always just so enriching. And that's why I absolutely love doing it.
The minute you say that pediatric dentistry or taking Baba to the dentist for the first time is not just about teeth, but about the whole body, it really opens my eyes to so much. Research has shown that children who benefit from the essential 1,000 days in their life will grow on to be healthier. Children will go on to have healthier families. I mentioned to someone earlier, we're going to talk about the 1,000 days of children's teeth. And they said, yo, that's a long time. And I said, you know what? It's a long time. But if you think about it, it's 2 years and 9 months, you know. We need to look, where's baby's teeth? Has it grown? Are we pacifying? Are we not? By the way, if you are interested in dummies or pacifiers or thumb sucking even, we've done a podcast about that on Baby Brunch, and you're welcome to check out babybrunch.co.za. But my question to you is, why is the first 1,000 days of dentistry or even dental health so important in my child's life?
The studies have shown that if you have cavities in your mouth and your baby is born, they are 3 times more likely to have cavities. And that is why the first 1,000 days is so important. It's mostly about education, picking up subtle, small little things, and also just creating a lovely dental home for your child. Because if they have a dental home, you have somewhere where you can go and ask all these questions, and not asking Google, rather asking your provider. And then your child ends up getting the best care. Also, very often we get bombarded with all of this information and you don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Should you use a pacifier? Should you not? Should you use a bottle? Should you pump? What should you be doing? And when you do see a provider that is knowledgeable about dental health, we can tailor this information and then tailor it to what your situation for your family is. And then you get to make an informed decision. One of the lactation consultants, she always says, we always say fed is best. And she says, informed and fed is best. Yes. And that is how I feel about dental treatment as well. Because when we make choices, we should make an informed choice for our child. And if there is consequences to it, we should know about it and plan accordingly. Because sometimes we have to make a compromise. Because life is busy. Sometimes a compromise will actually end up being a blessing in disguise. Very often I find children that had a lot of dental problems, and they are very good at their oral hygiene, and then they end up not having holes in their teeth as when they're teenagers or adults. So sometimes it's a blessing in disguise. But if you start early on and you can make an informed choice for your child, it makes all the difference.
Initially, when we thought dental care, no one thought of the fact that it can help us with tongue ties, it can help with breastfeeding. And it's so wonderful that you're giving us back that power of making a choice and finding the right healthcare professional that can help you on that journey, because it's not just teeth. So when it comes to dental care, where do we start with our babies? I mean, babies don't have teeth.
Yes, that's true. Babies do not have teeth. But when we talk about good dental health, it actually starts in utero. And it actually starts before you decide to have a baby, to go have a dental cleaning, have a screening, have your x-rays taken. So this does not need to happen while you are pregnant. And then while you are pregnant, taking really good care of your own oral health makes a massive difference. We ideally want you to go clean your teeth at least twice during your pregnancy to keep everything under control. Because while you are pregnant, a lot of things happen to your teeth dentally. And this actually has an impact on your pregnancy as well. So good oral hygiene and good oral health for your child actually starts with yourself, taking really good care of yourself, because the type of pregnancy that you have will determine the type of teeth your child will have. So the fascinating thing about baby teeth, you just said babies don't have teeth, but if you think at 11 weeks, the teeth start to develop. That is when you get these protein matrices that start to develop. And only by 5 months does the minerals then get incorporated into the teeth. So if you have any medical problems while you are pregnant, it can, like the rings of a tree, have an impact on all of your baby's teeth. And this is what we are seeing way more often than we did in the past, where children have weak spots on their teeth due to a compromise in pregnancy. So if something happened during your pregnancy, if you are aware of that, and that's very often when people fill in my questionnaire, they're like, why does she want to know about my pregnancy for my child? But because it has such a major impact on the type and quality of teeth, this will then determine the type of treatment that your child they need for their teeth.
Because this was going to be my next question, you know, how does pregnancy affect the dental health of my unborn baby? But I mean, that answers it at all. What does happen to your teeth in pregnancy?
So when you are pregnant, your hormones change. Mm. So because of the hormonal changes, your whole oral flora changes. The bacteria that lives within your gums changes, and this makes you more prone to getting gingivitis and then, of course, periodontal disease. This means that your tooth has a little pocket or a little sleeve. The bacteria within that little pocket then changes, they're more aggressive. Mm-hmm. So your whole immune response has now changed as well. So you cannot as efficiently fight the bacteria in your body because you might have to maintain a pregnancy. And this makes that your gums will bleed more often. And mothers, and they are so not concerned, so they brush softer because their gums are bleeding. But actually, we want them to go see someone if your gums are bleeding to help you to actually create good dental health. Your mouth becomes drier, so your whole salivary flow decreases while you are pregnant. You tend to have things like morning sickness, so your mouth might be a lot more acidic. You struggle with reflux. All of these things will impact your dental health. And then the very, very scary thing is that if you then have these dental problems, it can lead to low birth weight, early delivery. They've even found the bacteria that grows within your gums on the placenta of your baby. So your pregnancy will affect your dental health, and your dental health will affect your pregnancy. And if we kind of look at it like this, that dental health for your baby starts with you taking good care of yourself and self-care, then you are setting your baby up for a really successful dental life.
Our audience understands and knows how to take really good care of themselves. And without trying to sound patronizing, but what would the practical tips be for maintaining good oral health during pregnancy?
So taking into account that now your gums are bleeding a bit more, you need to use a really good toothpaste, brush your teeth for 2 minutes. Floss every evening. If you see blood, please go to a provider to clean your teeth. If you have had an episode of morning sickness, do not brush 30 minutes. Wait at least 30 minutes before you brush, because the acidity will actually dissolve your teeth. And if you then go ahead and brush, you will brush away your teeth. You can also use something like xylitol-based products, which are amazing. They work in the sense that if you use them 7 to 8 times a day, they actually decrease the bacteria, which is so amazing. They bind to the bacteria, they go down your throat, so it keeps your mouth nice and wet rather than sipping on water the whole day. You can also make use of a few other dental products to keep your teeth nice and clean. And prevention is better than cure. So that is the biggest thing, is taking good care of your own dental health. Brushing well, flossing well, going to see your dental provider, using these products, tilting your head back while brushing makes a big difference as well. You can also use some of the the chlorhexidine-based sprays at the back of your throat to depress the gag reflex, because very often when mothers are pregnant, they struggle a lot with a very, very strong gag reflex. So by then spraying prior to that, it depresses, or just putting salt at the back of your throat will then depress your gag reflex, making the brushing easier. So these are just practical tips that anyone can try when they are brushing their teeth to take better care of themselves. It also works for children, just tilting their heads back.
Where have you been all our lives? Huh? Okay, so in the 1,000 days of our baby, where are we at this stage?
280. Baby is going to get born.
Okay, so baby arrives. We are elated, overwhelmed, and we are incredibly grateful. What does a dental examination look like for baby after birth?
So we are rather going to talk about just an oral examination, Rod, because you won't necessarily have a dentist examining your baby. So it will be a medical provider. And the most important thing that I usually advocate for my mommies that are pregnant is to advocate for your child to have an oral screening.
Right.
So when they are born, you want someone who has knowledge about that. Sometimes it's your pediatrician, sometimes it's the lactation consultant, sometimes it's a midwife. But someone needs to check your child's oral cavity.
Okay.
And then the one thing I always say is that people, I don't know why parents are so scared of their children's mouths. Like, they just peep in there and they don't really want to look.
Mm.
I want to really encourage parents to have a look inside the mouth. Because if you know what your child's normal is, you can immediately identify what is abnormal. So when they are checking your child, usually they will stand from behind. They will use a light source to see properly within the mouth. You will lift up the lip, look for a lip tie, see that the lip can easily flange over the nose. You'll look in the cheek space. You'll look under the tongue, see what the tongue frenum looks like, what the elevation of the tongue looks like, what does the palate look like. And very important at this screening, this is very often what the pediatricians are also screening for, is to see if there's any clefts or submucosal clefts to make sure that everything is whole, because sometimes these things do not actually get picked up during your pregnancy. So you just need to advocate that your child has a proper oral screening. If you then run into trouble, you will then take your child to a provider, especially when they have symptomatic problems, say with lip tie or tongue tie. You will end up with a provider who will then, once again, just like I mentioned, in my practice, I put them on the dental chair. I get the mom and dad to stand right by me so we can check everything together.
Right.
We look for things like lip blisters. Is the baby using the outsides of their lips to try and hold on to whatever they are drinking from?
Okay.
We lift up the lip and see if it's easy to lift it up. Look if they've got deep folds. Look if their face is very scabbed because they are constantly trying to hold on to the breast. You also look for symmetry, because this is something that we often miss. So you have to stand behind your baby and see that the head bulges in the right spot. If you had very constricted fluids and things, or very little amniotic fluid, this is not uncommon, but it will self-correct with a lot of tummy time. You can also sometimes see that the jaw's been regressed, the head of a double chin, fluids getting stuck over there, but also just seeing that the eyes on the same level, the mouth is on the same level, because all of these things will have an impact on how they feed. And this is the big thing. We want to see that they are within the range of normal. If we start to run into symptoms, then we can identify what the problem is and address that for the babies.
So is this something that my dentist needs to do? And what if they don't, or they think, say, you know what, you need to go to a pediatrician to do this? Who would be the right medical provider to do that?
So the first person who will be checking is usually your pediatrician.
Right.
Okay. If you run into trouble, you need to go to a provider that is very well trained in the infancy part. Not all dentists get trained in this. This is a lot of extra training that you need to do. And a lot of it comes from just screening and working very closely with lactation consultants to be able to find it. Even there's a few in Johannesburg, there's quite a few very good ENTs that are also very well equipped with doing this. But you would have to go and do a little bit of of your own research to find a provider who is comfortable. Very often just phoning the office and telling them, I want to bring my two-week-old. Well, they will tell you whether they are willing to see a two-week-old or not.
They'll say, yeah, no, we don't, or yes, we do. This is how often do you do a dental examination of baby? Would it be something that's once off?
Usually when we see problems with feeding at that very early age, or if they, for instance, get born with teeth, then very often someone will call us to come and then sort out the tooth. My youngest patient that I ever saw was a three-hour old. I literally ran over at the hospital. Just one tooth it was completely loose. Usually those teeth could develop without roots. Okay. So it's quite an easy thing to remove it. But he hadn't even met his sister yet and he already had a tooth removed. Sweet. And it's because it's very dangerous for them because they can aspirate. So it can be very early on. Usually I see them within the first 6 months to address the lip and tongue tie. This is usually why they end up coming to us. Mm. Or if they have funny anatomy, like an early tooth eruption. So we do that very, very often for these kids. And then, of course, we usually end up seeing them only when the first tooth erupts or by their first birthday. This is what the more general answer would be for a general child that did not have any complications in a dental sense. That would only be with the first tooth or by the first birthday.
I think after today's podcast, you're going to have many patients. Dr. Kuneba Sedeno's details are in our biography section on babybrunch.co.za if you need to get hold of it. When you talked about positioning and so question, and this is, I don't know, so I'm asking, can a C-section potentially affect the baby's oral health?
So, yes, C-sections have not directly been associated with getting more holes. But if your baby is born via C-section, you have to think that they come from a sterile environment. They did not move through the vaginal tract to get their very good biome. So by 3 years, usually it's leveled out, the same for vaginal and also for a C-section baby. But the problem with C-section babies is that they can often have comorbidities, things like they are more prone to obesity, asthma, diabetes, and these things will affect their oral health. Yeah. So the complete answer would be they are more likely to have conditions that would affect their oral health, but just having a C-section will not directly affect it. Their oral flora will be different from a vaginally born baby, but it will not directly impact it as it levels out throughout the years. But because they are C-section, you have to be more prone to look at different problems that might occur, and like asthmatic. If they are asthmatic, they're going to have an asthma pump, and these things will then directly affect the amount of saliva they have in their mouth. So that is an important thing that I also have on my questionnaire, that patients are also always wondering why I want to know this, because it has an impact on their oral health.
Because we're talking about the body and oral health, it seems like there's so many factors that can actually influence our oral health. You know, self-esteem when it comes to not growing teeth or it doesn't grow back. And children ask, but why haven't you lost your teeth? We've all lost ours, you know. Or even the milestone conversation that we often have on this show, where, you know, everyone in the mommy group, their children are growing teeth and you're still waiting, you know, and the teeth haven't grown. What do we do with those factors? Like, we still look at milestones and it's important for us as moms, and we kind of want to feel like we fit in.
Yeah. So that is the most often asked question, is when will the first tooth appear? Mm. And I always say, teeth do not read handbooks. They do not know when to come out. So teeth, when they are ready and half of the root has developed, that's only when they have enough stability to erupt. So I've seen kids have teeth way past their first birthday. I've seen a baby born with a tooth. So the variance is very, very wide. And I would never worry about something like that. It is something that will happen. It's also not one of those milestones that you can weigh up, that one child's going to have a teeth and this means that this is going to happen. So teeth come when teeth are ready. So don't stress about that. The average, though, is around 7 to 8 months. Then the teeth will start erupting.
Talk about all these external factors, you know. What about having a pet or sibling? Can this also affect your teeth?
So when it does come to siblings and pets, your whole gut biome is actually a lot more rich. So these children tend to struggle less with allergies. And because...
Do you know that I was actually kidding? This is an actual thing?
Yes. So they are less prone to having allergies. And because they have less allergies, they tend to not be mouth breathing as much. And because they don't mouth breathe that much, it can then impact their health in the sense that they are less prone to getting holes on their teeth. So having siblings also, modeling behavior, good or bad sometimes, makes a big impact. And if the first child has a cavity, the rest of the children are three times more likely to have cavities as well. So a lot of the public health things have been aimed at looking at the eldest child and screening them for problems. And then you can know to target the family to help and educate that family. So having siblings has a major impact. For me, in a practice sense, if they have a sibling, they usually can spit quicker. Because they can see this behavior that, so if it's your first child, usually around four-ish, they are really good at spitting. Mm. But
and
for a second
after
child,
after brushing.
And then the second child, well, at like two-ish, they'll be able to spit already because they've been seeing it such a lot of times. So having siblings actually has a major impact on them. And also, they tattletale on each other. So the toothbrushing usually is done better because they will split on each other.
Yeah.
Like they'll say, you didn't do two minutes.
Yeah.
And then,
and you didn't brush your teeth this evening.
Yeah. It definitely has an impact on your child. Fascinating, hey?
Okay, so breastfeeding and bottle feeding. Does that have an impact on our dental health?
So we want the palate to develop properly. We want the tongue up in the palate. We want the kids to have their tongue against their palate and breathing through their noses. And the breast really supports this. It does not flow just milk into the mouth. So the oral cavity really needs to work. And this helps a lot for the development of the oral cavity. But when it comes to bottles, one needs to be very aware of the shape of the bottle because when the bottle is in the palate, this is the thing that will now be shaping the child's palate. So for us to develop an adult swallowing pattern, so babies are born with an infant swallowing pattern. So they have to hug the nipple, be it a bottle or breast, hold and elevate it against the palate and then create a seal. With a breast, they create negative pressure other than just the vacuum. They don't just have to depress the teat to get the milk in there. And this is the infant swallowing pattern. But by 7 to 8 months, we want them to start developing the adult swallowing pattern, which means the mouth moves more laterally and the tongue is the thing that should be in contact just behind your upper teeth and make a little bolus and then swallow. So anything that then keeps the tongue out of the palate is then actually going to decrease the ability to develop a proper swallowing pattern. So when you are using things like bottles, most of the pediatricians will advise by 14 to 16 months to transition away from the bottle, not the milk. It's not the milk. We have no problem with the milk, but the way they are taking in the milk has a big impact.
Okay.
So if you are breastfeeding beyond a year, your likelihood of getting holes in your child's teeth is slightly more, but it is the method that we use. So be it a breast, be it the bottle, when we are beyond a year, we need to make very good care and clean their teeth really well. And then the feed to sleep practices is mostly that causes the problem. So when they are feeding, you have to unlatch, be it the bottle, be it the breast, make sure that they have a good swallow, clean their mouth, and start working towards feeding, brushing, and sleeping, getting the milk away from the sleeping routine, because this is how cavities develop. So if you're using the breast, it helps for the whole development. If you're using a bottle, you have to be very aware of the shape of your child's mouth and how they are developing their swallow, because this can then lead into picky eating problems.
So backtrack quickly. So now baby has been born. I'm not breastfeeding. I'm using a bottle. How do I know that I'm using the correct one for later development of the teeth?
So you have to look at the recommendations. Okay. So usually different bottles have, some kids do better with certain bottles. Your best person to ask is a lactation consultant because they are really good at looking at the latex and seeing what the latch looks like. But also, If you then decide you are going to use a bottle, you need to be aware of the amount of time the bottle is spending in their child's palate. Mm. If you then combine that with pacifier use, this is when we usually then get a problem in the development, an increased overjet, anterior open bite, all of these problems that will then spill into their dentition. So if we make the choice, or if the choice has been made for us and we're going to use a bottle, we just have to be aware of how our child's dentition is developing, and then also be proactive in getting them to use things like an open cup for swallowing. It's the best thing to teach them swallowing. Rather using a cup with a nice soft straw, getting their lips nice and strong. Because now, if they don't practice using their lips as often, we want to then do our own type of myofunctional therapy for our child to get their lips nice and strong, to get everything back into the normal sphere of development. Things like using a spoon. Very important when you use a spoon is to not dump the food. The child needs to use their lips to clean the spoon, because then they develop lip competence. So small things that usually you'll have a discussion with will have a major impact on how they develop their oral cavity. So if you make a choice, just know that there might be some more work for you into the future.
All right. So to summarize, as we are entering day 460 of 1,000, 470. Where are we, doctor? I've lost count. All I wanted was just the baby. Now I'm counting down the days. So in summary, it does ring true that in order to take care of baby's oral hygiene is actually about taking care of the whole body. You're not just seeing the dentist. It's actually a much bigger role than that. So this is exciting for me. Okay, so now baby is ready to grow some teeth. Come on. Teeth comes out. So you said 7 to 8 months?
Yep.
Is that when the first tooth will erupt?
Averages. But you show me the average child and then I will give you money, because there's not a thing like an average child.
So I have a question around this, okay? I learned to make pancakes for this moment. And then my youngest, who's now 8, we had a birthday, who's now 8, the teeth erupts, but all three of the children that I have, They started with a front, what is this one?
Incisor.
She gets, what's this one?
Canine.
She gets a canine.
So this usually shows us that there is an orthodontic problem.
What?
So the canines should only be exfoliated closer to the age of 12.
She had two canines before the incisors came.
But also, once again, like I say, teeth do not read handbooks, ne?
And then the joke was, we lived in Cape Town at the time, okay? So now she's walking around with these two canines, and every joke book that was ever written came out of all the aunts' mouths, okay? Which was not funny. I just want to remind you guys, this is snarky, ne? Mes maak nie grappe van kinders wat nie 'n front bite het nie.
Yeah, that's true. So you can see variations. Okay. I've seen children that start with their upper teeth and then their lower teeth. So once again, there's no handbook telling the teeth what to do. When they are ready, they come out. Mm. So losing teeth is the same thing. When they are using, when they're a little bit out of sequence, we want to take x-rays to make sure that everything has space in there. Because if they're a little bit older. But yes, yeah, it's a different thing. But if they're getting their teeth, one needs to be very, very mindful when they are getting teeth, because it is a very challenging time, I would say. So the studies have shown a lot of like irritability for babies. And then a lot of people believe that they can get fevers. So this is actually not true. So what can happen?
Wait, doctor, backtrack. Hold on. I'm still stuck with my Cape Town commie. All right. So are you saying that fever and teething is not related?
No. So the studies have shown that it can cause a slight rise in body temperature, okay? And it causes a lot of irritability, a lot of drooling, a lot of going off their food and things like that. But remember, when they are getting their teeth, they are little oral scanners. So if they've got this open area, everything goes into their mouth, and then usually they get a bacterial infection because of the open site. So it's not really the teeth that cause the fever. It's a bacterial infection. So when we give advice on teething, we usually like local methods. Things like making a nice ice lolly for your child. Then they get a feed and they help to cool down that area, using foods in the fridge, taking just a normal cloth, wetting it, putting it in the fridge and giving that to your child, because that helps a lot more in the long term. We don't want them to use any topical agents. A lot of the topical agents that are available in South Africa have actually been removed from Europe and America, because there's one that contains benzocaine and that can actually cause that your body, your child will not be able to actually absorb their oxygen into their blood, which can then be a medical emergency for your child. So that's why we don't like topical agents. Some of the topical agents also cause a chemical burn around the tooth. So you think it's going to get give them relief for 5 minutes,
but it's actually
going to cause bigger problems.
So you're saying so how do you treat the bacterial infection then? So now child is growing a tooth, the tooth is erupting, there is a high fever. We're saying, she's teething, and the fever is high, but there's a bacterial infection around this. So now she's got the cool cloth and we're making the ice lollies from all the carrots and apples in our fridge. Okay. Yes. Thank you, doctor. How do we treat the bacteria?
So that's why we don't say to give them any pain medications. Remember, fever, not the very, very high fevers, like, 0 to 3 months, we don't want to play around with fevers at all, because they can't regulate their own body temperature. Yes. But a slight rise in their temperature would actually help to fight the infection. So that's their body trying to fight the infection. So we won't be treating those fevers, because they usually don't go way beyond. If they do, however, go way beyond, then that is usually when you need to go see a medical provider, because they now have an infection of some type or sort. And then they will decide whether they are just going to treat the symptoms and whether your child would need additional medication for that. So that's why we want to stay away from the pain medication, so we don't end up camouflaging a bigger infection and then the child. And that is why the recommendation is the way it is. And then the other thing that's very important is keeping them hydrated. So if they go off eating and they've been eating quite well, then up their fluid uptake until the tooth has erupted. And then the other thing that's very important is keeping the actual area clean, because sometimes we forget that if you do not brush that area, they will get gum disease around it. So there you have to be cruel to be kind, because the cleaner it is, then they just have the discomfort of the tooth coming out. They don't have gum infection on top of
that.
And
how would you clean the area around the new tooth?
Brush really well.
In small baby?
Brush really well. Because brushing really helps.
In tiny baby of 460 days old?
You just use your toothbrush and brush it really well. It's really not that bad, because if you let the plaque sit on that area, that's when it starts to become difficult. Okay. If you can just do a gentle sweep and a massaging motion
with
in that
baby
area,
toothbrush.
It's very easy. It doesn't even,
how
it actually
toothpaste?
Feels quite nice. A smear.
Smear.
So I saw this lovely hack on TikTok where you actually take...
Wait, doctor is on TikTok. Okay, yeah.
Where you take the toothpaste and instead of removing that little metal film, you take a toothpick and you just make a small little hole in there.
Okay.
And then you can put a grain on very easily rather than that. But I like dipping more. So usually a smear, so a grain of rice, that's what they say. Mm-hmm. But I always put the toothpaste on my hand and dip the toothpaste so you can get a little bit everywhere, because otherwise they just... eats it off.
And just to make sure, what kind of fluoride are we using at that stage? So 460 days, there's a tooth erupting. We want to get the plaque off that little tooth that's coming out. No, my baby is teething and she has a high fever, but it's actually not the tooth that's giving her the high fever. It's actually the bacteria in her body that's giving her the fever. Doctor, how much? What fluoride?
So the international standards is they want about 1,000 units of fluoride. Okay. But now you have to think, your baby just has one tooth. So before they have teeth, we want to use a little silicone finger with a toothpaste that does not contain fluoride, because there is no teeth in there. So then you use a toothpaste that does not contain fluoride to clean the most of the mouth, because you have to clean under the lips, in the lips, under the tongue, in the palate, using something like the silicone brush. And then you only use a smear of a fluoride containing toothpaste on the teeth.
Okay.
So that those teeth can have the benefit of the fluoride and your child not swallowing all that fluoride. So that's where you're going to use two different things. You'll still have some left over, because now this is the very next, a new tooth, and you use the toothpaste with the fluoride for that little tooth, and the rest of the oral cavity use something that does not contain fluoride. So I really like Curaprox because they have enzymatic activity. They don't have things like triclosan in there, microplastics in there, things that will be harmful to your baby. So we always have to think about the ability to spit. I always talk about the spitability. So a child that is 0 to 1 years, they have no ability to spit. That means we need to really vet what we are putting inside their mouth, because they will be swallowing it. So things like SLS, is the soaping or the foaming agent within toothpaste. I don't want my child to be eating soap. No. If they were sitting in the bath munching on soap, you would remove that. So I'm not going to give them something in their mouth that contains soap. So if you make a choice about the active ingredients within your toothpaste, this is going to help you a lot. And if your active ingredient is something like only the xylitol, then you need to know that this is not dose dependent and you need to use it 7 to 8 times a day. If you then choose to use something like Curaprox, it will still be dose dependent twice a day. And if you using your fluoride toothpaste, that's very dose dependent. So you'll only have exposures of a smear on those two little small teeth, brushing only them with the fluoride part of the toothpaste. Okay.
And in the rest of the mouth with a silicone finger?
You just brush everywhere. It's lovely using a toothpaste that does not contain the fluoride, because then they can safely swallow that without causing any major problems for the child.
There's lots of myths and stories and some wonderful ones around baby's first erupting tooth. I mentioned the pancakes earlier, you know, so I made the pancakes and it was joyous and Oma even came over. It was lovely. You know, baby has a tooth. And what other myths exist within this eruption of teething that we just need to take with a pinch of salt? I mean, is there any other advice that you can give us? I really enjoyed the cleaning conversation now. I mean, no, because here's the truth. I want to hear it from a dentist.
Yeah. It's true. Not really when it comes to teething. There's not a lot of things. The only myth that we do find very often is when they're a little bit old and they have a double row of teeth. Mm. Lots of people get very upset when this happens and just wants that front tooth out. But baby teeth are essential. They are little space holders. They've actually got stem cells that grow bone. So we want that tooth to fall out when it is completely ready. That's usually when it turns pink or blue, and the child can take it out without any problem themselves. So I would say with eruption, it's more with permanent teeth when they have a double row or shark teeth, then the parents just want you to take that front tooth out, which is not ideal for the child. The other myths around, I would say, is that the babies are stealing the calcium from the mothers. And this is mostly just because of the gum disease, the swelling of the gum, and then the bacteria hides within that, and then it eats away at your gums. Because remember, teeth have, when they formed, they formed. It's not like someone can go stealing it.
My kids asked me the other day why my hair is so fine. And I said, because I gave it all to you. I didn't change the perception at all. That's what they're thinking until today. We have had a wonderful conversation. Oh, the team was incredible. We had a beautiful podcast around pacifiers, dummies. And the team, they gave us so many answers, and it feels like I want to play it here, you know. But in terms of pacifiers and the effect on our health, what should we keep in mind when using them?
So when it comes to a pacifier, so always what I say is that we as dental professionals are always going to say, ideally, we do not want a pacifier. But each family, once again, needs to make the choice for themselves. And there is no judgment ever from your dental provider, because this is a decision, an informed decision that you need to make. But when we are looking at a pacifier, we want, once again, something nice and flat, something wide, just like what the breast would be squishing down or the tongue up in the palate, something that will support these good oral habits. Something that's not very thick where it goes into the mouth, because this is then going to develop the teeth at an angle like this, which is not ideal. So when we are using a pacifier, we need to make an informed choice so that it supports good growth, to actually grow a beautiful face. That's always my goal for children. Who does not want a beautiful child? And all of these things play a major role. So when you're choosing a pacifier, use something that has a thin entrance that supports something like self-weaning. A company that spends money on scientific-based papers to see what their pacifiers are doing. Right. These are the things that we can look at when you decide on using a pacifier. But also when you decide on using a pacifier, you have to think about when you're going to wean your child off it. Because if the child is using a pacifier for longer than 2 years, usually you can either need some occupational therapy or play therapy to address the sensory or emotional attachment that they've actually created with their pacifier to efficiently take it out of their routine without causing damage to the child. So when you make these choices, you just need to know that these things are going to be in your future. And also the other thing is, it's like drinking and pregnancy. In Europe, they do it all the time and they have very little incidences of problems occurring. Mm-hmm. With pacifiers, this is what I find. Some children are extremely susceptible to developing a malocclusion. A malocclusion is the fancy word to see the teeth are not in the correct mm-hmm. position. Other kids are very, then again, not prone to getting mm-hmm. a malocclusion. And you never know
which child you have,
what you're going to have. So when you go see your provider, it is a discussion that you need to have mm-hmm. and decide on using a pacifier that will support the good things, like the Curaprox ones I like, because they have some research behind it and they actually fulfill to the protocols that is prescribed to us as a dental providers internationally. Mm-hmm. So we just need to make an informed choice. And when we do make this choice, we need to know what the implications are going to be. And then your provider should be looking at the development of your child to tell you, maybe we should consider using something else or maybe weaning them off before these serious implications start to happen.
You just said something really wonderful. Before we introduce something to our children, we should think at the time when it's not around anymore, or when we need to take it away, what the consequence will be. So thank you for that. I think it applies to a lot of things. One of the podcasts that we discussed, and I'm just telling you this in line with what you've just said, is the issue of a device to a child, you know. But when phone time is over, how are we going to make sure? What's the limit? Like, what are we going to say in order for a child to know that phone time's finished or device time is finished or you can't watch television anymore now? And how do they know that? You know, yeah. Did we say to them when they started, it's going to be 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So, yeah, it's just interesting. What about children that grind their teeth?
So grinding is one of
you
those.
You just got really excited.
So grinding for me is one of the most fascinating things. Mm. So when it comes to grinding, we have to differentiate between daytime grinding and sleep grinding, okay? And they're completely different. So when kids have teeth and their teeth are erupting and they are teething, a little bit of grinding is not uncommon. It's a very common occurrence, and most of the time it will completely coincide with the teeth actually coming out, the teething. But when it comes to the sleep bruxism, so when they are grinding their teeth at night, this is a one of the papers that I read, which is fascinating. So they grind. So basically, we've been taught in dental school that stress causes grinding. But when they're talking about stress, it's not stress like, what am I going to do tomorrow, work? It's not always psychological stress. It can be physiological stress, like having a tight neck muscle, having someone shine a light in your eye, because that's the studies that they did. So when there is this stressor that now actually occur to you while you are sleeping, what happens is you go from parasympathetic, which is your rest and digest, to fight and flight. Oh, okay. The fight and flight then causes you to breathe more, to your heart rate will increase, your blood pressure increases, and then what happens is you then activate your masseter muscles. With children, when it comes to grinding, this is usually due to an airway stress because they cannot breathe. They are lacking oxygen. Then their masseters will contract. This then moves the tongue forward and this opens their airway. And this is then why the whole thing of grinding is actually happening. So when I see grinding in children, it makes me very concerned because now we have to look at why this is happening. Does this child have some type of sleep disordered breathing that will then actually reflect in their behavior? There's even been associations with bedwetting, which to me was absolutely fascinating, because then basically what happens is because they don't go into REM sleep, because they're constantly going into fight and flight, the hormones that need to be excreted to tell you to go to the bathroom does not get excreted. And that is then why they bedwet. So when we see grinding, we really have to put on our think caps and see, why is this child grinding? Another association that's actually common is deworming. So if a child has worms, they tend to grind more. So I always tell...
Stop it.
Yes. So that is So fascinating. So when a mother comes in and they tell me that their child is grinding, I'm really starting to ask questions like, when last did you deworm your child? What is your sleep hygiene like? Because we don't want screen time half an hour to an hour before sleeping. Yeah. We also don't want rough play right before they go to bed. And then, of course, we want to look at the airway. So something that's very handy and a practical thing that moms can do is you can get apps that you can download to actually record if your child is snoring. You can take a video of your child sleeping to show your healthcare provider and actually just filling in, get a BEARS questionnaire. There's a questionnaire that you can download from the internet that's internationally used to look at all these markers that will then indicate that there is some form of sleep disordered breathing. And when you get to the cause of the problem, that is only when the sleep disordered breathing and bruxism will then actually go away. Fascinating.
Hey, doctor. Okay, doctor, I'm ready to go shopping. All right, so earlier we talked about fluoride toothpaste, xylitol toothpaste. I really don't have an idea of where to start. So what should I consider when choosing a toothpaste for my baby?
Okay, for your baby.
Baby.
So we're going to start first talking about zero when they don't have any teeth.
Yes.
Okay. So when we choose a toothpaste, we have to look at something like the active ingredients. Okay. So when we're talking active ingredients, we're talking about things like fluoride. Okay. So if it has fluoride or it does not have fluoride. Xylitol is also considered an active ingredient. Then you're going to look at something like enzymatic activity. So that's why I love Keroprox, because they have enzymatic activity. So these enzymatic activities actually sit onto the teeth, preventing the sugars from sticking to the teeth.
Right.
And that's why the children love it, because their teeth stay nice and smooth. So when they have foods that would stick to their teeth, if you've brushed with something like Keroprox, it actually prevents the foods from sticking to their teeth. So you're going to look at the active ingredients. Then you're going to look at the consistency of the toothpaste. Kids like mild flavors and they like gels more than paste, because that gritty feeling, because lots of children are very, very sensory sensitive. So you have to look at the texture of the toothpaste, and paste usually do a lot poorer when it comes to children.
Okay.
Then you're going to look at flavor. You want to frame it like something they would love.
Strawberry.
So in my practice, I always say the Keroprox is strawberry ice cream flavor.
Mm.
So I would ask them, do you like ice cream and do you like strawberry ice cream? And then they love it. If your child has been a very sickly child, I have to give this advice as well. And they've had a lot of medicines to a specific taste, say strawberry, your child most likely will not like a strawberry toothpaste.
Right.
Then you have to look at something like banana or watermelon or anything else to actually help them overcome this problem that they have. So you're looking at what's inside the toothpaste. You're looking at the consistency of the toothpaste. You're also looking at the texture of the toothpaste and the flavor. Okay, so that is all the things that you have to look at. Then you have to look at your child. How well can your child spit? So when it's 0 to 1 years, there's not a lot of spitting happening. So you're going to be very, very, use your fluoride toothpaste very limited. Between 1 and 2, you're going to start encouraging the spitting. So you're going to teach them and show them how to spit. We do not want them to rinse with water after brushing, because otherwise you're rinsing away the active ingredients. And if you don't do that, you actually have an effect for up to 3.5 hours after brushing.
Okay.
So we want to brush, spit out the excess, and then leave the active ingredients in there. So when you're choosing a toothpaste, you have to look at your child specifically, what they like, and then also involve them in the choices. Sometimes it helps to buy 2 flavors. And this is, you get to choose. Not, do you want to brush your teeth? It is, did you like the strawberry today, or would you like the watermelon today? And that really helps them to make a good choice and make the toothpaste and the brushing a lot less challenging. So when it comes to choosing a toothpaste, it is such a personal choice. And then also, usually if you come to a dentist that has a lot of variety,
nice.
I let the kids taste, and then you can see what they like and what they don't like and make a note of that.
How do we select the right toothbrush for baby and then also for our children? I mean, mine just go for the color. Pink and purple, you know. Select a toothbrush for us for small baby from silicone stage, and then for baby, and toddler and children.
Okay, so when it comes to the babies, we're always going to either use medical gauze or we're just going to use a cloth to clean their mouths. When they're about 3 months old, then we can start to use a silicone little finger brush that works really well to clean their teeth. Then the advice that we usually give when you're selecting a toothbrush to actually brush a child's teeth, you want to have something with a small head with very, very soft bristles, because soft bristles actually holds onto your toothpaste better. Okay. So you get a better polishing effect. I always tell my patients, you are polishing your teeth and not scrubbing a toilet. And this is how you're supposed to then decide on which brush to use. So you want something that's really soft. You also want the toothbrush to have a slight tilt. So you'll see, that's why I love Curaprox, because it has a 45-degree tilt that makes it easier, because we actually want to brush up into the gum line. So the angulation makes it easier for you to brush. And then, of course, the colors really, it helps to actually get them to buy into it. And then also the handle must be easy to hold for you as the adult. When it comes to brushing your baby's teeth, you're also going to stand behind the baby when you are brushing their teeth. So you need to feel comfortable with the toothbrush. Mm. And when it comes to our children that are sensory sensitive or special needs, when it comes to choosing a toothbrush, it actually helps to give them multiple toothbrushes to find the one that they like, yes, because that makes a big difference. When your child is now between 0 to 4 years, you can continue using the small headed toothbrush. You can also then start considering maybe getting an electric toothbrush for yourself just to do the top up with. So you stick with the manual toothbrush for them, because it's the best thing to teach them how to brush their teeth. It's the only way they're going to learn the dexterity. But to save some time and less effort, using an electric toothbrush yourself just to do the quick top up really makes a big difference. And then if they're older than 4 years, you're going to choose a toothbrush, of course, according to the color they like. That's also nice when it is a variability, but also something with a handle that's made for children's hands. Because if you've ever seen an x-ray of children's hands, they are like jelly. They have nothing in between their bones. So it's different from what we need as adults. So it needs to be easy to hold, easy to place, and easy to brush with. And lots of children are very independent, so it helps to have a manual toothbrush for them to brush their teeth with, and then you do the top up. That I find works the best when it comes to children and brushing. So you have to find something that you like, but also that your child likes. And having something that has a lot of bristles, so that's the other thing. You want very, very soft fibers that holds onto the toothpaste. So if it has very few or nylon bristles, for instance, it's not going to hold onto the toothpaste. Something that has a lot of bristles, a little bit of product will go a long way. So then the advice of using a smear actually takes you very far.
How many times a day should we brush our teeth?
So toothbrushing with toothpaste is only twice a day. So that is when it is dose related. But children can brush their teeth without the toothpaste as many times as they like when they are using the correct technique. So once again, remember, no scrubbing motion, small little circles. And then the one thing I always keep on telling my parents is you rather want an A than an R, because R closes up the spaces when you are brushing. So when you're brushing the upper teeth, you want to place the toothbrush in and ask them to close their mouth slightly, tilt their head back, and brush their teeth. You're always going to use your non-dominant hand to hold the lips so you can get in, because children pull their lips extremely tight when you are brushing. But the secret is to supporting the head and having a chin tilted up, because that helps a lot for brushing. So I hope that answers your question. So if they want to brush, they can brush as many times as they like. But especially if you buy something like the Curaprox, in my house, I have to hide the toothpaste because Madame loves to go and take the toothpaste for herself. So that is the one downside to having an amazing toothpaste.
Or an amazing mom who's a dentist, right?
Because you have to hide the toothpaste from them. But if they want to brush their teeth, they can go ahead.
Thank you for showing us the ropes on early oral hygiene in our lives and how it can shape our bodies. Dr. Kune, it has been a pleasure having you here. To find out more about Dr. Kune Besaidenhout, you can go to firstsmiles.co.za.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior, available from leading pharmacies and retail stores.
CuraProx aims to celebrate 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. CuraProx Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.